Hey, thanks for listening to the Two Pros and a Cup of Joe podcast with Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox, and myself, LeVar Arrington. Make sure you catch us live weekdays 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern or 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. You can find your local station for the Two Pros and a Cup of Joe show over at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
We got ourselves another banning in the world of sports. Somebody got another group of people in trouble, and we will get into all the details of it coming up here in just a couple of moments from now. It is Two Pros and a Cup of Joe, LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox here on FSR. You can hang out with us, as always, on the iHeartRadio app. You can find us on hundreds of Fox Sports Radio affiliates and wherever the hell you are, making us a part of your Thursday morning. We appreciate you doing so, and we're going to take you all the way up until 9 a.m. Eastern time, 6 o'clock Pacific here on Fox Sports Radio. We were talking about it yesterday, guys, the situation at Oklahoma at quarterback in which, Caleb Williams comes in, he leads the Oklahoma Sooners to an epic comeback against Texas, their arch rival on Saturday. And so the big talk was, is he going to be the starter or is Spencer Rattler going to be the starter? Because Spencer Rattler got benched. And he's this highly touted recruit, and he was the odds-on favorite to be the number one pick in the upcoming draft. And nobody could figure it out. And we were speculating. It felt like Caleb was going to be the starter. Also, Spencer Rattler was told he was given a day off on Monday. We talked about, okay, is he thinking about whether or not he's going to, stay at school or if he's going to leave? All of that was happening. And then yesterday it came out. And according to some reports yesterday, the Oklahoma student newspaper watched practice from a public building across the way, and they reported that Caleb Williams was getting all the first team reps. So Oklahoma responded by banning media availability, canceling it for everybody else who covers the team. So there's that. The student newspaper ruining media availability without even realizing it because Oklahoma found out that Caleb was their starter or getting the starter reps with the Oklahoma Sooners there. So there's
with a set of binoculars, yes, is what I read. So
what was their last name? Schefter?
Here's the funny thing about canceling, practice and all media availability and all that, right? Technically anyone could do what those kids did, right? And yes, it's a public property. Nothing's going to stop them from doing that. So unless you go inside the indoor facility and you kind of hide everything, TCU, who's your opponent this upcoming weekend, they're probably, that's what they're going to prepare for. And I think here's the reason why that's important. Oklahoma currently is number four. They're in the college football playoff if that was to start tomorrow. I think if they win out and go undefeated, they're probably going to still be in. In order to do so, they've got to get through a round-robin schedule in the Big 12 and then play probably, Texas seems to be the second-best team. I think that's who's going to play again in the Big 12 championship game. Well, look, in order to get there and do that, like, Caleb Williams is a different quarterback than what they had in Spencer Rattler. So this kind of gives Gary Patterson and his defense a little bit of an edge, a little bit of something to start game planning for, and that's what he's known for. He's more of a defensive specialist. So I think it's kind of funny. These kids, they're obviously trying to, like, crack the story and figure out who the starter is, but it may be at the detriment of their own team.
Yeah.
You remember there was a story years ago where Kevin Sumlin fired the guy who cleaned his pools because the guy who cleaned his pools went on Twitter and said, hey, I saw Coach Sumlin at his house. He was talking on the phone. Hopefully it's to a new defensive coordinator. And Kevin Sumlin responded on Twitter and fired him from the job because he said, oh, okay, you want to talk about what I'm doing here when it comes to this. And coaches like that just seem like they're a little bit paranoid about anybody finding out what's going on. But did anybody actually think Spencer Rattler was going to be starting this game?
That's the better question.
I thought that was pretty much a done deal when he was given Monday off.
Like, well, and his dad came out and did an interview.
Yeah. So what's the freaking out of it? There's only one way for Lincoln Riley to handle this. Start Spencer Rattler. Just despite everybody else. Just start him anyways, because the Oklahoma student newspaper, and you can blame them for maybe if you lose the game or don't win a national championship, just blame it on the Oklahoma student newspaper for having a pair of binoculars across the way.
Nah, that's you don't do that.
Blame their ass.
Spencer Rattler has had his opportunities, and I think he continues to squander them. No one is going to debate that. You know, the ball hasn't been protected the way that it is needed to be protected. And just the conclusions that have been drawn about Spencer Rattler as it applies to the better good of this team, you would be best served to assume that Caleb Williams is going to be the starter for now. Now, I don't know if this is a moving on of sorts for the entire season. Just like Spencer Rattler played poor enough to get replaced, there's always the possibility that Caleb could hit a wall. They could be preparing for him better now that they know that he's playing. There's a little bit more film of him on, you know, that they can study. So there's a chance he could hit a wall. You know, there's this whole finality aspect of how we do things. It's another part of, you know, evolving culture that I don't like. There should always be an opportunity for redemption. And Spencer Rattler right now is in a dark place, and he's going to have to continue to push and fight back to the light, whatever that may be, whether it's at Oklahoma, whether it's somewhere else. But to think that this is just a foregone conclusion that maybe he's out and that's it is what it is, it's just Caleb moving forward. I don't think that you just go away from what he is as a talent. He's having a rough patch. Players have rough patches sometimes. It's just interesting, the higher profile you are, the harder it is for you to be able to have those rough patches.
And Caleb Williams is mobile. I mean, what would stop, obviously, I mean, there's a chance he could get hurt running around with the football, and then Rattler gets his opportunity again.
So any given reason, right?
Right.
Any given reason.
So I think you see how things play out this season. If I was in his shoes, I would not get frustrated by it. And then I would reevaluate and see, you know, hey, what would it look like if I entered the draft? He is draft eligible after this year. If he doesn't play the rest of the year, right, you know, where else could I go? I'm sure he'd be a hot commodity, given that he's got some experience at the college level, and he can obviously sling the football extremely well. So he would be desired. He'd be wanted. He'd be an upgrade in almost every single place. So, you know, maybe he goes somewhere else for a year and then decides to go to the NFL.
Let me ask you this, all right, and tell me if I'm just thinking way too far deep into this. But if you are an NFL scout and you're looking at Spencer Rattler and he enters the draft, isn't the first thing you're thinking, wait a second, so Baker Mayfield was the number one pick under Lincoln Riley. Kyler Murray was the number one pick under Lincoln Riley. Jalen Hurts' draft stock only improved because of one season under Lincoln Riley. But you couldn't work there. Like, why didn't you work there? Like, wouldn't it feel like he needs to almost reinvent himself or repair whatever his reputation is now, based on the fact that the guys before him at the same school under the same coach all reached the top of the iceberg when it came, or the top of the mountain when it came to playing quarterback and getting drafted at the next level?
I'd subscribe to that if he didn't start as a freshman. Like, he's a young player. You know, none of those other guys were young players when they got their opportunity there. I mean, Hurts had already played a bunch of ball at Bama. Baker had already played at Texas Tech, then to Oklahoma. You know, Kyler had sat and watched. So I just – that's the hard part about
great
it.
Great
points. He's played already, you know, a season of football as a freshman. And he fought through adversity last year in the Red River, you know, showdown. They benched him. He came back, helped them win the game. So, and then he played much better football in the second half of the season. So I kind of look at it and go, maybe he'd get more of the benefit of the doubt, more so than doubt. Maybe people would look at him and say, well, you know, there was a lot of other, you know, circumstances around him. The O-line hasn't played quite as well. They ran the ball better last week. The receivers aren't what they've been in the past, and he's still a young player. So maybe they say, look, Lincoln Riley knows what he's got in these quarterbacks. he gave him a scholarship. He started him for a reason. You know, maybe again, he gets the benefit of the doubt, not so much the doubt that you're talking about.
He's in trouble. I mean, that's about it. I mean, he's in trouble. And either he's going to fight through the trouble and shore himself up, right the situation. Because, God, like, sometimes we take the ability to right a situation out of the hands of these players. But it very much exists with these players. I just said it earlier. Those family members that look at their kid and they're like, my kid should be starting. Well, what is your kid doing to prove that they should be starting? Because there are a lot of things that you can control. You're taught when you play the game of football, control the things that you can control. But be brave enough to accept, it's in the Bible too, be brave enough to accept the things that you can't. And be wise enough to know the difference between the two. So Spencer Rattler has more than enough opportunities to be able to show his worth still today, right now. And either he's going to focus in on becoming a better player and fixing what it is that got him in the situation that he's in now, or you can live in it. And if you put your thumb in your mouth and you go sit in the corner and hope that the pain is going to stop, or hope that the weight of the world is going to stop sitting on you and getting worse, the news flash of that is the world doesn't care.
Can I ask this?
Sure.
What has he done so bad?
Great question. I would just say protect the ball it would be the only thing I would look at and say.
Okay, but he's still got a 2 touchdown to 1 interception ratio.
Yeah.
He's completing the highest percentage of passes in the Big 12. He's throwing for the second most yards. Like, they're undefeated. They're number 4 in the country right now.
Is this just expectations?
Yes.
That they were way too high?
I think it's that. I think it's also what he has out around him. I mean, look, even with Caleb Williams, the more he plays behind this offense, you're going to see him struggle too at times. This is not the same offense. Unless they continue to run the football the way they did versus Texas, which I doubt that's going to be the case this week, just because about Gary Patterson and TCU plays defense. But even if Caleb Williams starts, I don't know that you're going to have this same offensive explosion that they've had in prior years. It's just this offensive line's not there. The wide receivers aren't quite there. It's not the same group that I think that Oklahoma fans are accustomed to seeing. But I keep going back to, like, what has he done so bad to get to this point? Like, we're writing him off like he's not going to be one of the better quarterbacks in college football wherever he would go next year if he wasn't at Oklahoma. He still will be.
If he did decide to enter the draft, where is he?
I think he gets drafted. Now, the only thing that I'm concerned by is there's some people who are kind of put off by, like, the QB1 stuff he was on, yeah, and like his personality.
And that could be some of this as well, too. Some of the dislike.
Right. 100%.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't know if that ends up making him a mid-late rounder. Maybe there's some teams who are like, why would you decide to come out, right? Jamie Newman. Remember he had that great year a couple years ago at Wake Forest? Transfers to Georgia, ends up sitting out the year, and there was a thought that, you know, maybe he was going to get beat out. You know, he was maybe sitting out due to COVID. Whatever the case, maybe he decided to opt, for the draft. Instead of playing, he just decided to say, I'm going to go in the draft. Didn't get drafted. So I don't know. I mean, I think Spencer Rattler's more talented than Jamie Newman was, but I don't know how NFL scouts are going to view the decision if he doesn't play the rest of the year to decide to come out.
Because who are the top prospects? Carson Strong, Sam Howell.
But that's, like, what I'm saying. It's not a great class, man.
So maybe it does make sense to go.
Yeah, but it's not addition by subtraction at that position. Let's take Spencer Rattler because there's no really good quarterbacks in this draft. That's not how it works. You're not gonna invest draft stock in somebody that you don't believe, especially high draft stock in guys you don't believe can affect
the hard
team.
Part about saying that is, like, there are teams like Christian Ponder, where when the Vikings took him, teams were like, whoa. Like, I remember talking to someone, they're like, we didn't have no one had like a higher than a 5th round grade on him. But, you know, the Vikings loved him. They wanted to take him. And so they did. So I don't even know about if it's addition by subtraction. It just comes down to taking one team to fall in love with you.
Yeah.
And if you could find that, like that, that's all that really matters.
It's two pros and a cup of Joe here, Fox Sports Radio, LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox. Brought to you by Discover. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover's accepted at 99% of places in the U.S. to take credit cards. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply. All right, it's coming up next. We're going to get an actual expert's opinion, an insider's opinion on what's really going on with this John Gruden Washington football team email, just disaster that has taken place this week in the NFL. We're going to get to that next here for you right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Later this hour, we are going to have another edition of the Prop Bet Monster as we get you set for Thursday Night Football, already week 6. So again, that'll be coming up in about 20 minutes from now here on FSR. Right now, though, always kind enough to join us here on Fox Sports Radio, he is Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter at the MMQB, and one of our favorites here on Fox Sports Radio. Albert, Jonas, LeVar, and Brady, we appreciate it. I'm just trying to figure out why you referred to me as Mr. Editor in an email last night. What's going on? With that.
That was a private email. I'm not going to talk about that here.
I mean, if you could ask one question of this whole situation involving Gruden and the emails and all of that, if there was one thing you wanted to know above all else, what would it be?
Like what the NFL found in the Washington investigation. Because, you know, clearly they had a lot of information, and they've had that information in their possession for over 3 months now. And so, you know, I think the first thing that sort of came to mind, guys, was that out of those 650,000 emails, the John Gruden emails were cherry-picked. And I'm not defending anything that John Gruden said in those emails. But, you know, the John Gruden emails were cherry-picked. And we now know more about what John Gruden said in the emails than we know about how Dan Snyder was conducting his business over the last 20 years. And that wasn't the point of all of this, you know? And, I mean, the Raiders could not go forward with John Gruden, and, you know, he should be gone, and I understand all of that. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, what they really went into all of this looking to fix and looking to address and looking to shine a light on, none of that's really happened, you know? And so, like, my biggest remaining question in this whole thing is not what's in the 20, 30, 40, however many emails it is, it's in what's in the other 650,000 emails, what they find in there, because that was what they were looking into to begin with. And, you know, if you really want to address something like this, I think And the other thing, guys, I mean, this is very clear in this, too. I mean, we're finding out now, not that we didn't already know, but it's the difference between the people who cash the checks and the people who write the checks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Richie Incognito, the bullying scandal in Miami, 150-page report. Ray Rice, the domestic violence scandal, 100-page report. Tom Brady, Deflategate, 250-page report. Those guys, if you Google their names, you can find those written reports online now. You can go online and find those now. You can get details on everything that happened there. What happened with Richardson, what happened with Robert Kraft, with Jerry Jones, and now with what's happened with Dan Snyder. You can't find a word published by the NFL on them.
Hmm.
What is your best guess? Does Dan Snyder have something on someone? Or
yes.
Like, where does this thing go from here? Because it seems like something has to happen in Washington next.
Yeah, Brady, you know what I think? I think these guys all have something on each other. And I don't think any of these guys want someone else digging through their trash. And I don't think these guys want the precedent set that there's going to be punishment for X, Y, and Z. Because I think these guys all have skeletons in their closets. And so I think for the other owners, if they come down on Dan Snyder, if they take Dan Snyder's team away, well, then what sort of glass house are those guys living in? You know what I mean? And I think that that's the biggest thing is, like, that, I mean, look, like, and I'm not judging any of these guys individually. I'm just saying that, normally, like, you get that rich, you have to have some dirt under your fingernails, you know? You did some things to get there. And so, like, I think the biggest thing here is that the owners don't want to set a precedent for one another where if X or Y or Z happens with an owner, he could be harshly punished, he could have his team taken away. And I think that's symbolized every week in the fact that Dan Snyder's up in that suite watching his team's games. And I don't think they're putting that on TV or anything else now, but my understanding is he's been at all five of Washington's games this year. So really the only punishment he's taken here is a $10 million fine, which is like 10 bucks to the rest of us. So I think that's where it is, Brady. Is like, I don't think it's that Dan Snyder has anything specific on one person. I think it's that these guys all have something on each other. And I don't think any of them want to set the precedent that they're going to start punishing each other for these sorts of things.
Yeah, but let's be clear here. The Carolina Panthers, Jerry Richardson, was forced to sell the team. And we all know the reasons why he was forced to sell the team. So that line's already been crossed.
LeVar, I'm going to stop you there. He wasn't forced to sell the team.
Okay.
He did that on his own. He did that on his own volition.
Okay.
And there's a difference here.
But what's you know that what based I mean? On? Like, but what's it based on?
It was
like
based
the technicalities.
On,
go ahead.
No question. I know what you're saying, LeVar. There's no question that you're right. Like that's why he sold the team. But it was Jerry Richardson's personal decision to sell the team. Like Jerry Richardson's the guy. It was the only stadium in the NFL that had the NFL shield at midfield. Like Jerry Richardson played in the NFL. He deeply, deeply cared about the league. And so Jerry Richardson was ashamed of what he did, and he should have been, because what the culture in that place was a mess. And so, and I know this because I've heard from other owners what he did. Now, he took one for the team. He said, like, I don't want the league to have to deal with this going forward, so you know what? I'm going to step aside, and I'm going to sell my team.
But that's what everybody's – that's what I'm getting at. Yes, I did.
Is Dan Snyder doing that?
So here's the point I'm making, right? Regardless of if it can be construed differently because he decided to sell the team versus was forced to sell the team. Semantics.
Right.
Look at Gruden. Gruden decided to resign, but we all know what would have happened next if he did not resign. So the point is that I'm making – Dan Snyder isn't going to be the guy that, oh, I love the National Football League so much, I'm just going to get out of the way. He's shown what he is and what's important to him. So the question is, when saying you don't want to set that precedence, aren't we beyond the point of where you can say we don't want to set that precedence of how you're going to be judged? Because now I can't see where we're standing right now that those other emails are going to be an oversight of what's taking place right now. And if that's the case, then you are going to see where we're at currently. We think that it's actually, if not the same, along the same lines, it's worse than what happened in Carolina, which what's taking place or has taken place in Washington. How does Dan Snyder get through this without the NFL looking bad, without Dan Snyder looking horribly bad? How do they get through this without it resulting in him being held accountable the same way that everybody else is being held accountable, whether they decide to sell their team or resign or whether they end up being forced to do it?
LeVar, I think if he was going to sell his team, if he was going to show some shame here, I think it would have already happened.
I agree.
I mean, I think it would have already happened.
But is it like, his choice?
If he went through, like, if everything that happened last year, right, like between the name change, the workplace stuff, the cheerleaders, all of this stuff that happened last year, like, I think Dan Snyder probably feels right now like he's weathered the storm. That'd be my guess. Like, that he probably feels like he's gotten through what he needed to get through, and he's not going to be told by anybody to sell his team. And I don't think that, like, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in the NBA they did make Donald Sterling sell his team, right?
Yeah.
That was forced?
Yeah.
It was forced.
Yeah.
That was forced, right? I don't think NFL owners are going to do that to each other. Because, again, like, I just don't think that those guys want to set the precedent that you can take something away that you own. And I like look like I if I'm the other 31 if I'm the other 30 owners, I guess excluding the Packers, if I'm the other 30 owners, I'm irate right now because he's made all of us look awful. And I would hope that there's at least some owners that think he should be forced to sell the team. But I think if he was going to step, if he was A, going to step aside, or B, be forced to sell the team, I think it absolutely positively would have already happened. Because if you watch the Jerry Richardson thing, that instant, that report came out, that was from Sports Illustrated, from one of my colleagues, John Wertheim. I think it was the end of December of that year. I mean, the team was on the block before New Year's Day. So I just think he was going to team about this, or if the other owners were going to gather and say, you're out, I would have already happened. Mm. And, you know, like, I just, again, like, I think for the other owners, it's about precedent. And I think for Dan Snyder, it's about no one's going to tell me what to do with a property that I spent this much money on. He was defiant when it came to the nickname, and he's been defiant with just about everything else. And I don't see how, when we have 20 years of history on the guy, anything's going to change now.
Wow. Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter at the MMQB, joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox-Eddy here on FSR. How did Adam Schefter's involvement in this whole fiasco and the email leak that was sent to Bruce Allen, how did that land with you as a reporter who's been covering the NFL as long as you have?
Yeah, you know, I know and like Adam and really respect him. He's obviously accomplished a lot. I'd never do something like that. You know, I've had people ask me before, like, hey, can I get a look at the story? Can I check this? It's just ethically it's something we don't do. Now, like, running facts by people, you always do that. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, if it comes down to do I have this right or do I have that right, especially when it comes to, like, complicated subject matter, like a CBA negotiation, well, you're always going to do that sort of thing. And I know because, I mean, I was on street corners covering the labor talks in 2011, and I didn't know a lot about labor before that, and so I had to learn really, really, really fast. And so, you know, I think, you know, it's a tough look, but I've always respected the work that Adam does, and I'm inclined to believe him when he says what he said. You know, it's just like it's not something that I would ever do. And it's just it's one of those lines that I would be completely uncomfortable crossing. Now again, like far as like facts and stories, pieces, you double check all of that because accuracy is the most important thing. But you know, it's the idea that you would just send somebody a whole story. I haven't done that. And I mean, I think Adam said this in his statement, like he never gave anybody final edit. That would be like a cardinal sin, as if like you're giving a source like some sort of editorial power over a story. And Adam said in his statement that he didn't do that.
Right. He didn't give the final edit to Mr. Editor. So we'll leave it.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, I hope he was kidding when he said that. I mean, I guess I would have to think that that's a tongue-in-cheek statement. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a formal title.
Hey, Albert, one would hope, but I'm done with that guy. That's why we love you having you on, okay? You're our guy,
yeah.
Albert.
Albert,
well, I want to ask you about the Las Vegas Raiders. It seems like Mark Davis is a little – maybe he's paranoid that he thinks people are going to try to somehow wrap this around him and try to take his team away from him. I mean, could you see any scenario where that would happen from all this fallout?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I do think, like, Mark has garnered, I mean, and it's, this is coming from, like, I think people had, like, other owners had zero respect for him before. But, you know, I think he did gain some respect in the way that he handled the move and, you know, the deal that they were able to get done in Vegas. Because, I mean, there's never been a stadium deal like that, like, where, I mean, he basically got handed – you know, nearly $1 billion in stadium funding. So I think like he's viewed a little differently maybe than he was 10 or 15 years ago as an owner. You know, I don't think he has any intention of selling the team. Brady, I really think, like, if you put the pieces together here, I think what really he feels like almost like a cornered animal over is the way this whole thing was handled. And, yeah. I mean, I'll take you, if you guys want, I'll take you through what I think might have happened here. Don't, like, again, like, this isn't, like, nailed down or anything like this, but a theory that I've heard floated by a few people.
No, we'll nail it down right now. Guys, make sure you're recording in the back. We're going to run this later. We got it. We got you.
Lee F. Apis.
Let's just call this informed speculation. Okay,
good.
So the NFL gets the emails back from Beth Wilkinson in July. There's 650,000 of them. Of course, it takes forever to go through them. You find a handful, whatever the number is, where you see John Gruden's got some really problematic language, problematic behavior, and you're saying in the NFL, you're saying to yourself, if this like trove of emails somehow gets out and people know that we had it, we are going to look awful that we let this slide. So we need to do something about it. So they go to the Raiders last week. They say, we have these emails and you need to do something about it. The Raiders say no. Friday comes. They leak the first one. That's the warning shot. Suspend him. Take him off the field. Do something. The Raiders do nothing. He coaches Sunday. All right, so now we've already put out the one email where maybe you can explain it away, right? All right? So we put that out. You didn't do anything about it. You know what comes next? Next, we're going to remove all doubt, and we're going to start dropping more emails out there. Jeez. And if you want to keep playing this game, we will keep playing this game.
Who are these people doing that? Who are these people doing that? Who are you referencing?
Raj.
The NFL.
Okay.
Raj.
NFL.
Man. Okay. He's talking until about you, Raj. And
until you do something about it, we're going to keep, until that folder is empty, we are going to keep throwing those emails out there.
Oh,
and
God.
I mean, like, obviously, like, on Friday, the Raiders felt like, all right, maybe we can manage this. By the time Monday night came, there was no more managing it. And so, like, I could see where Mark Davis might look at that action from, like, that sort of action from the NFL. Because some of that stuff, like, you know, some of that stuff did happen. And he might feel to himself, he might think to himself, you would never do this to Robert Kraft. You would never do this to Jerry Jones. You would never do this to John Mara or Art Rooney, but you're doing it to me.
Could you imagine Jerry Jones's emails?
Oh.
Good. I'm sorry. Good. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'll leave that there.
Yeah. No reason to touch it.
But yeah, I mean, like, I think that's what it is, guys, is that I think it's an owner who's probably been made to feel for a long time like he's a second-class citizen, and now, like, he was basically being, like, I mean, more or less put in a corner by the league. And, I just feel like he was treated like he is not an equal with the other 31 teams. And I think that that's why he reacted the way that he reacted.
That is fascinating. There's a lot of this story that's really ugly, but just it's almost like, I feel like I'm watching the movie JFK. Like, it's just like they're sitting on the park bench realizing there's all these other layers to this. It's just, this is a crazy, crazy story. Albert, awesome job, man. That was really,
yeah,
really
thanks,
good.
Thanks, Albert.
Appreciate you,
get
bro.
Him on Twitter.
Our guy, baby.
At Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter for the MMQB. We'll do it again next week. We might actually talk about some games, too, I swear.
Well, we'll try next week. Hopefully there's not anything else in that folder that gets out over the next few days.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
We're just getting started.
all right, good stuff there from the great Albert Breer. It is Two Pros and a Cup of Joe here on Fox Sports Radio. Coming up next, it is another edition of the Prop Bet Monster. Ooh. We are all tied up as we look ahead to Week 6 and Thursday Night Football right here on FSR.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Two Pros and a Cup of Joe. It's LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox with you here on FSR. Coming up top of next hour, we're going to take a look ahead to a Thursday Night Football. Interesting matchup we got. Bucks and Eagles. A lot of injuries to look at. Maybe some cause for concern. So we'll have that for you here top of next hour. The prop bet monster standings after 5 weeks, you guys are sitting at 2-2-1. All right, so you had a tie 1 week. You are 2-2-1. Which means this is going to be a pivotal week for all involved here on Fox Sports Radio. I know you guys are nervous, right? Really nervous about this stuff?
Very, very nervous.
I can tell. All right. So without further ado, it's time for the Week 6 edition of this.
Here to feed your degenerate gambling soul. The Prop Bet Monster.
Sucker.
All right, so we do this for Thursday and Monday Night Football during the NFL season. It is Brady Quinn versus LeVar Arrington, and we will get things started here. Bucks at Eagles, obviously, later on tonight. First prop bet created by yours truly is, who catches the first pass from Tom Brady? Your options are Mike Evans, Antonio Brown, Cameron Brate, or an Eagles defender?
Oh, this is a good one.
Ooh.
Go ahead, Brady.
Man, Antonio Brown had a big game last week. Evans did too.
No Gronk, so Cameron Brate feels like he's going to get more of a workload.
Well, they've been targeting more, but they haven't really been on the same page. I'm going to go with A.B., Antonio Brown.
Interesting.
I'm going with Evans.
All right, so we got a split there.
It's one of those two.
Next up, who leads the Eagles in rushing yards? Jalen Hurts, Miles Sanders, or other?
Miles Sanders.
I'm saying Hurts because this is the number one rush defense in the NFL. Look, they're going to give up some yards throwing. I don't think they want these guys to be able to run the football. So I think they're going to do everything they can to stop Miles. And it may be passing plays where Hurts takes off and finds production running the football.
So they're this is the third straight year they're the number one rush defense in the NFL, Tampa Bay.
I mean, LeVar could speak to this, but I kind of feel like sometimes defenses are like so hell-bound on stopping the run that like you're giving up some one-on-one opportunities on the back end of the pass game.
Yeah, well, not only that, but when your offense is playing very well, teams are forced to have to throw the ball. And so you're not running the ball as much, and so you don't have to defend against the run as much if you get – behind too quickly. So obviously Tampa Bay has had close games, but you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Which Tom Brady clip is shown first during the game? Him losing to the Eagles in the Super Bowl, or him forgetting what down it was on Thursday Night Football at about this time last year?
Losing to the Eagles.
Okay.
Can I take C?
No, there is no other option. Oh. There's just these two.
Oh. I can't do none of the above?
No, you can't. You got to pick one.
All right. What were they again?
It's him losing to the Eagles in the Super Bowl or him forgetting what down it was on Thursday Night Football last year.
Those were Chicago.
Yeah,
I'm just going to
take him losing in the Super Bowl. Okay. I'm going to go with Brady. I'm going to offset the fact that none of us are going to be right on this one.
Okay, fair enough. All right, is Nick Sirianni wearing a visor with a pen attached, neither or both?
Visor.
Wait, what do you
no
mean?
No pen
both?
Attached.
Both meaning a visor or a visor with a pen attached.
I thought B was the visor with the pen attached.
Yeah, that's a good point. Never mind that. Scratch that. I didn't think this one all the way through.
Oh,
yeah, that's a good point. All right, so we'll just go ahead and we'll scratch that one there.
All right.
All right. We'll scratch that one there. There it is. We'll take that on the podcast, please. Horrible better here.
It's a horrible setup. You're setting us up. Now exposed like those emails that you're setting us up for failure.
A visor with a pen attached or neither?
I'll go with B.
Okay. Why do you put like non options that should be viable options? Like,
come on, we got one more. Make a pick.
Okay, B.
All right, so you're going to
whatever
go with
B is.
All right. Next up, first Philly landmark shown: Rocky statue, Liberty Bell, a cheesesteak restaurant, or the place where a fan ate horse crap off the ground after they won the Super Bowl.
Well, that was multiple places, right? I'm going to go with the last one. We go D or whatever that is.
Okay, that's good. You guys are really into this.
I'm going with the Liberty Bell.
All right, very good. That is a job well done. Absolutely terrible performance by all involved.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.